Tanisha Giddens versus Community Education Center. Mr. Stroder.
Good morning. My name is Alan Stroder. I'm an attorney representing Ms. Giddens. I'm from Odessa, Texas. Briefly, this is a case where Giddens was a corrections officer for the defendant CEC in Odessa, Texas. She has alleged, and we believe proved, systematic harassment by her superior, Sergeant Aguilar, and ultimately her termination, both as quid pro quo and as retaliation for her rejecting his advances. Now, CEC's position is that she was terminated for insubordination when she took leave off in face of an express denial of that leave. Of course, we take issue with that. The central issue in this case, I believe, is whether there's a jury question that the decision of Warden Brewer, who is apparently the ultimate decision maker, was tainted by Sergeant Aguilar's unlawful animus in order to satisfy the causal element in this case and preclude a summary judgment on that issue. The trial court said that there was no proof of the causal element and, of course, rendered the summary judgment. And we, of course, disagree with the trial court's findings and order. Under the burden-shifting framework, of course, she may avoid summary judgment if the proffered reason by CEC, if there's a jury question, whether or not the proffered.
Let's put a fine point on this. I want to understand as best I can what was communicated by Aguilar to Brewer. What exactly was it that was communicated? And what's the record site for that?
Well, it was communicated by Aguilar as actually shown in defendant's exhibits on page 645 of the record, that where Warden Brewer tells us that he was informed by Sergeant Richard Aguilar and the assistant warden, Warden Linville Mosby, that Giddens had used all of her vacation and all of her sick leave and made the statement that she was going to take the time off anyway. That was communicated to the warden by Aguilar, who we're saying is the harasser in this case. And on the other hand, Aguilar, in a memo to, there's another memo from Aguilar, it's called General Statements, the way they put it, I believe. He claims to have told Ms. Giddens, and we disagree, there's evidence, and she specifically denies that, claims to have told Giddens that she couldn't go to the seminar to attend the U.S. Marshal's interview because she didn't have the time off. And this was after talking to Warden Brewer, that she couldn't go to...
No, I'm sorry. I misunderstood what you just said.
Okay. Aguilar, in a general statement, you know, billing up the personnel file here, tells us in that general statement that he told that Giddens that the warden said she couldn't have the time off because her time was used up. She, of course, denies this. And he further says that if she took the time off anyway, she would be written up. And in the same time, he told Brewer that, and he represented to Brewer, that she... told him she didn't care. We'll just see what happens. Ms. Giddens, of course, denies that. She tells us that there was an approval of her leave if sufficient time, which she claims there is, and there was, that she never really learned that the leave had been denied until she returned back to work on October 22nd after her one-day leave. That's when she was told and taken off duty and told, no, your leave was denied. And I believe the question here is whether, under the cat's paw theory, Aguilar's misstatements tainted Warden Brewer's decision whether or not to terminate. And I believe certainly it's the proximate cause of it. He told Brewer that she said, I don't care about any time off, I'm taking it off anyway, which is a significant
insubordination.
She denies that. We believe there's a jury question there. And of course, under the burden shifting analysis that I don't have to go too far into, if the reason given is untrue, it's a pretext, then that's enough to go to the jury, even in face of their proffered legitimate explanation. And we can look at the evidence, and the court agreed with us that she really did have the time off, did have sufficient time off. So, number one, the proffered reason is untrue. And secondly, and probably even more important, what Aguilar told the warden, that she had told him that she was going to take time off anyway, was also untrue.
If he just said, no, she doesn't have enough hours, it'd be a lot closer case. But if there's evidence in the record that he told Brewer that he informed her she didn't have time off, and she said, I don't care, I'm going anyway.
Okay. And as far as a quid pro quo claim, the court said that there was, sufficient evidence to show that any animus on the part of Aguilar that wanted her fired, and of course we believe under the reasoning I've just talked about that there was. But in addition to that, have to bear in mind that the evidence is in here that there's another corrections officer named Contreras, and who evidently Sergeant Aguilar had been courting to some extent, according to Ms. Giddens, and he was told her, look, if you are more like Contreras, I wouldn't be treating you this way. I wouldn't be treating you badly. I wouldn't be giving you all these bad assignments. But anyway, in any event, he told her that, if she's more amenable to his desires, then she'd be treated better. We believe that is certainly close to direct evidence of quid pro quo. In the end, and I don't have a whole lot more to say in this part, in the end, I think there's a jury question on which version of the facts to be believed. We believe there is a jury question, and that the summary judgment should have been denied.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Ross.
May it please the court, John Ross, Thompson Co. Cousins and Irons, from Dallas, for the Appley Defendant Community Education Centers. There are a number of issues in this appeal that are addressed in the brief, far more than could be adequately dealt with in 20 minutes. And so it had been my intent to rely primarily on the brief, but to address two issues on appeal. However, Mr. Stroder's comments caused me to add a third. The two issues I was going to address on appeal during the oral argument is the application of the Eller-Farragher affirmative defense to the sexual harassment claim.
That wouldn't cover her cat's paw theory, would it? If Aguilar, in fact, had animus and he falsely told Brewer that Ms. Giddens said, I don't care, I'm going to go anyway, and communicated that to Brewer, what is the affirmative defense is not going to save that that claim, is it?
Well, you've precisely hit upon the reason why I want to address this on appeal, because the cat's paw theory that's been alleged in this case is not supported by the evidence. And the third point that I was just going to add, based on Mr. Stroder's comments, is you will not find anywhere in the record below where Mr. Stroder made to the district court the argument that he just made to you, that the cat's paw theory was predicated on the fact that Sergeant Aguilar allegedly told Warden Brewer that Ms. Giddens was going to take off anyway, whether she had sufficient leave or not. The only act that Mr. Stroder alleged in the district court below as the basis for the cat's paw theory was that Aguilar had allegedly lied to Warden Brewer about whether Ms. Giddens had sufficient leave to take off. You will not find the argument that he made here this morning anywhere in the record.
Doesn't the cat's paw defense turn on whether Aguilar was trying to get her fired or just thought she'd be disciplined?
It doesn't. The reason I picked the two points that I did is because the appellant's argument for reversal in this case, both the summary judgment relating to the sexual harassment claim and the retaliation claim, depend upon the validity of the appellant's cat's paw theory. That is specifically with regard to the sexual harassment claim. You don't get to the Ellis Farragher affirmative defense if there's been quid pro quo sexual harassment. And their theory for quid pro quo sexual harassment is dependent upon the existence of Aguilar acting, the cat's paw theory applying with respect to the discharge. That's the quid pro quo is the discharge. That's the only act of quid pro quo discrimination that was alleged below. It's also the reversal of the summary judgment with regard to the retaliation claim is also dependent upon the application of the cat's paw theory, and it's simply not present in this case for several reasons. Under Staub, there are two elements that a plaintiff has to establish in order to avail themselves of the cat's paw theory. One is that a supervisor took an act motivated by some sort of discriminatory animus, and that that act was the proximate cause of the ultimate employment decision of the decision maker who didn't have discriminatory animus. There simply is no evidence in this case that Sergeant Aguilar took any act that approximately resulted in an ultimate employment decision. He made no recommendations whatsoever with regard to the discharge. There is no evidence in the record that he made any recommendation with regard to the discharge. Even if you take Mr. Stroder's argument at face value that, and we disagree, and the court will have to decide for itself whether the record does or doesn't create a genuine issue of material fact on whether she did or didn't have sufficient leave. And on that point, as the district court correctly noted, it doesn't matter. It's not a material fact because, as the district court said at the hearing we had on the summary judgment, Warden Brewer had the authority to not deny her leave request whether she had sufficient leave or not. And as Ms. Giddens stated in her sworn EEOC charge.
Okay, well, assuming we disagree with you on your estoppel theories, assume we just, the law doesn't get you there and that comes into evidence, that's a good basis to cross-examine and say, well, that's, you made inconsistent statements.
Okay.
But assuming that we allow into evidence her allegation that I didn't know that my leave had been denied until I got back.
That
no one ever told me that my leave had been denied.
That still wouldn't get you to quid pro quo for the discharge. If she didn't have sufficient leave, or if Warden Brewer was told that she didn't have sufficient leave, and on that basis he denied her leave, that might be a basis for her to claim that she was discriminatorily denied leave. That's not, under Staub, the act which the supervisor took, allegedly motivated by animus, has to be the proximate cause of the ultimate employment decision, of the decision to discharge. Whether Aguilar, correctly or incorrectly told Warden Brewer how much leave she had, the decision, the record establishes that the decision by Warden Brewer, contrary to what Mr. Stroder told you in oral argument, was not based just on the fact that she was insubordinate to his directive that she couldn't go on leave. It was also based on an extensive independent investigation of complaints by other employees about Ms.
If there was evidence that Aguilar told Brewer that Giddens had been insubordinate, Staub seems to me to say that you can't erase that out of a subsequent investigation unless the employer carves that out and says, you know, I didn't pay any attention to that.
I'm sorry. I didn't,
if you read Staub, it says it's a proximate cause. It may not be the cause, but it's a proximate cause, and a subsequent investigation doesn't remove that out of the picture unless the employer says, we didn't pay any attention to that.
What Staub says, and I'll quote from page 193 of the opinion as reported in the Supreme Court Reporter, if an employer's investigation results in an adverse action for reasons unrelated to the supervisor's original biased action, and that implies some kind of personnel action, not merely making a statement of some sort, then the employer will not be liable. In this case.
But look at the next sentence.
Yes, the next sentence says, but the supervisor's bias report may remain a causal factor if the independent investigation takes into account without determining that the adverse action was, apart from the supervisor's recommendation, entirely justified. There was no recommendation for an adverse action by Aguilar in this case, none. So the second sentence isn't applicable.
She says that Aguilar told her, that Aguilar told her, if you go on this, if you take leave, it's a terminable offense. And then she showed up at work late. Aguilar told her she had to go see Brewer the next morning. Aguilar was there with her, with Brewer the next morning. Can't a jury draw an inference from all that? And she says that there's evidence in the record that Aguilar told Brewer she'd been insubordinate.
I don't believe so, because, again, keep in mind, neither Aguilar or Brewer were deposed in this case. So I think to draw the kind of inference upon inference that was suggested by your question, I think would be beyond reason. It would not be a reasonable inference for a jury to draw. He didn't depose Sergeant Aguilar. He didn't depose Warden Brewer. The fact of the matter is that when she came back late to work and was placed on administrative leave, another employee, Officer Falk, came forward wholly independently of anything having to do with Sergeant Aguilar and made a complaint about Ms. Giddens. An independent investigation of that complaint was then conducted by two other supervisors. Aguilar had no involvement in the investigation. Sergeant Ashbrenner and the compliance officer, I believe his name was Mangus, conducted that investigation. They interviewed numerous other employees, all of whom concurred with Officer Falk that Giddens was a problem in the unit. And Warden Brewer clearly based his decision on that investigation, that independent investigation that Aguilar had nothing to do with. And I'd urge the court to look at a panel decision, albeit unpublished, in the Turner case cited in our brief from last year. The facts were almost identical. The plaintiff in that case had made a complaint to the HR manager about her supervisor that constituted protected activity. At some point thereafter, another employee in the plaintiff's unit came forward and told the ultimate decision maker that there was a problem with this employee in the unit, An independent investigation was conducted. Other employees concurred, and based on that, the employee was discharged. And a panel of this circuit said that the cat's paw didn't apply in that case because there had been an independent investigation conducted, and then the decision was based on matters unrelated to any adverse action that the supervisor had taken. And analytically, Turner is identical to this case. And
I didn't understand what you said about what the independent investigation turned up.
You mean what they found, what they discovered?
Yes.
Okay. I can't tell you which witness said what, but there were...
I just didn't understand what the word you used when you described it.
Collectively, the 10 witnesses testified, signed statements, that ever since Sergeant Aguilar had been selected to be shift supervisor and Ms. Giddens was not selected for the position of sergeant, that she exhibited antagonism towards Sergeant Aguilar, that the shift ran smoother when she wasn't there, that she went around and badmouthed him to other employees in the unit, things of that sort. She was a disruptive influence on the unit. And that's what the independent investigation found. It had absolutely nothing to do with anything Sergeant Aguilar did or recommended. This was an independent investigation conducted by two totally separate supervisors, and that was the primary reason on which she was discharged.
Was she suspended without pay when she got back on October 22nd?
When she came back late, yes.
Who suspended her without pay?
Warden Brewer. It was his directive that she be suspended, pending investigation.
Based on why?
Based on the fact that he had denied her leave, and she had taken off anyway.
He had or Aguilar had? Who had denied her leave?
It was there's a question about who communicated, but it was Warden Brewer's decision to deny the leave. It was not Aguilar's. In fact, one of the documents in the record is the second leave request that she submitted. She submitted a first one for 3 days leave, and she clearly didn't have that much. So then she turned around and submitted a second one for 1 day's leave. And Aguilar actually signed off on that, approving it as her supervisor if, and this is the key statement that's on the approval form, if she had sufficient leave.
Now, I'm moving off of cat's paw onto Farragut and Eller. Is it correct reading of the record that her alleged sexual harassment occurred, but she never reported it to a higher up?
Absolutely. If we get beyond the Cassiano first prong, or the fact that there's no quid pro quo, it's undisputed that the first prong of Ellis Farragut is met. And with regard to the second one, for the reasons we've cited in our brief, and I quoted her testimony fairly extensively about all the things she didn't tell Warden Mosby. The only thing she claimed she ever told Warden Mosby was that Aguilar cursed at her. She didn't tell him about all of the things that are set forth in the appellate brief now as the alleged acts of sexual harassment. She admitted in her deposition she never told Warden Mosby about. In fact,
right. She had the policy in writing and said she'd read it.
Policy was in writing. She acknowledged she read it. She signed acknowledgments for the policy and so forth. That's all undisputed. I would like to touch on one other point before we get off cat's paw completely, and that is the issue's been left open by a previous panel decision of this circuit about whether cat's paw principle even applies in a retaliation case, and it's our position it does not. The reason for that is that the retaliation and the discrimination provisions of Title VII are separate. The retaliation provision has its own language in it, which is virtually identical to the Age Discrimination and Employment Act, which we know under the Supreme Court's decision in Gross does not allow for a mixed motive analysis in an age case. And it's our position, this court has held in numerous cases, that the ultimate burden of proof on a plaintiff in a retaliation case is but for causation. And it's our position that the cat's paw, which will in a discrimination claim under Title VII or some other statute like in Staub, I believe it was USERRA, that allows for a mixed motive analysis, cat's paw will let a plaintiff, if they can meet the elements of cat's paw, establish that the supervisor's recommendation was a motivating factor. A motivating factor is not sufficient causation under either the ADA or the retaliation provision of Title VII. The retaliation provision was not amended, as were the discrimination provisions of Title VII by the 1991 amendments. And the language in the retaliation provision is the same as in the ADA. In a previous panel decision from last year, this court expressly left that question open. And it's our position that the court ought to address it in this appeal and hold that cat's paw does not apply in a retaliation case. Unless the court has additional questions, for all the reasons we've stated both in our brief and here in oral argument, the summary judgment of the district court ought to be affirmed.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Carter, you have 5 minutes on the button. I must take issue with some of the statements in that I believe CEC is telling us today that there is absolutely no evidence that Aguilar was going to recommended her termination. First off, I'm not sure that's really necessary. He could turn her in and say she did all this stuff just wanting some sort of discipline, suspension, or whatever. And you know, of course, the warden looks at this. What? You know, I told her she couldn't take off, and you. And she took off anyway, well, you're fired. Well, that's proximate cause. Whether or not he intended exactly the extent of the discipline is probably not dispositive here. But he did.
What does the evidence say about who made the decision that she couldn't have the day off?
The evidence says Warden made the final decision on the representations that she had no more time left by the assistant warden and Sergeant Aguilar. It's in that memo. That's what he says. And I will take issue with the fact that CEC says he didn't recommend her termination. This is a statement in the general statement that was put in her file. It tells us that he informed her that if she failed to show up for work on October 21st, 2009, that she would be written up for job abandonment and a request for termination turned in, which, you know, happened. And on another document in the record on page 628, and these, by the way, are evidence that the defendant CEC used in their summary judgment, it shows where it describes the incident. It's by Aguilar, and it tells, you know, whoever's reading this, presumably Warden, that Corporal Giddens was not showing up, and she put her fellow co-employees in an unsafe environment, and that she needs to be an example needs to be made of her. And it describes the event of when she it reflects that Sergeant Aguilar had talked with Warden Brewer, and she was not authorized to take time off to attend the seminar because she didn't have the time off, and she was told that the failure for the work on October 21st would lead up to be written up for job abandonment, and she didn't show up. So he did file a request for disciplinary action after the general statement. I don't know. I'm going to fire you. I'm going to get you fired if you don't show up. She gets fired. I mean, that to me is some evidence.
But there's a missing link there, and that is his failure to recommend firing to the warden. He told her he would. She did get fired. But there's no, the missing link is that he recommended that particular discipline. And how can you rubber stamp it if he didn't recommend it?
But the key is, here under Staub, as the proximate result of the information that Aguilar gave to the warden, which was pretty bad, that it resulted in her termination.
Then verified with independent investigation.
Oh, that's another. I was going to get to that. There is no independent investigation about whether or not she had the time off. You don't see anything in here where the warden goes down to the human resources and says, I'm looking at the records, and you know, she doesn't have the time off. There's no independent investigation.
Well, she wasn't fired for that. She was fired for being generally a problem, wasn't she?
No, no. She was fired for, they tacked on as another reason, eventually, that she was a problem, as the CEC puts it. But still, the main reason was the insubordination for not showing up. And if you'll look in the record on these, what these problems are, and by the way, this was not contemporaneous with when the event supposedly happened. What they did, they just, the warden evidently just engaged in a piling on when they made the decision to fire. They go out and get statements from other people around there, and they're not anything substantive or discrete reasons, concrete reasons. There are such things that violates policy by inability or unwillingness to work in harmony with other employees.
I thought she was demeaning towards the inmates, and I thought there's some more substantive things.
We've got
that.
There is, and one I see here that she also, and you know, they went through the discourteous and no harmony with other employees, and then says by making derogatory remarks about another employer or the residence. But all of these are after the fact. I mean, these are not when the events occurred. These are, she gets suspended for insubordination. It's a jury question. If the jury wants to decide, no, that's fine. The warden really fired her because she couldn't work in harmony with other employees, or she was a problem, then fine. But it's a jury question on this. And I don't see how it couldn't be a jury question on this, because it depends on who you believe.
Okay.
Now,
thank you, Mr. Troder. Your time is up.
I'm sorry.
We got your argument, and of course, the court will be in recess on the usual order.